I think I'm, now do I get to call, I think, now of course this becomes a justice problem. I got to see who came up first. Oh,
two.
Thanks, Deborah's got a list, two, go ahead.
Thank you. Age always gets to be important after a while. It was really interesting, this is about the second of Patty, and it's really wonderful because today I had another aha. Unfortunately, it's coming very late in my nursing career, but you know, I think I'll probably do this when I'm a retired activist and then I can say and do what I want. But the aha for me today was organizations, whether it's the hospital or the health authority or even the government now, are using the language of nursing, which is everything is evidence-based. Mm-hmm. And so what they do is they want to create change. And part of that is they take certain people, and I can only speak from my experience where I work, but they take people out of the organization, some of them who are BCNU members actually and are still in a program coordinator role, mm-hmm. or a manager role. And they take them away and they educate them about how to do change, how to make mm-hmm. change. They come back with some philosophy or theology or ideology about change, and they say, this is our evidence and this is how we're going to do the change.
Right.
But what they study is it's about the change for the patient. There's no part in that change theory which talks about the impact to the people that are delivering that change.
Yeah.
And we come into that too late.
Yeah.
And, you know, they even hire people who are change initiative people, right?
Yeah.
So that's the part that I kind of got today, and I think that's where we go and challenge them and say, you know, fine, it's all about evidence, but let's see the evidence about how it affects the people who are actually expected to deliver the change.
I couldn't agree more. Thank you. And I'll try and keep my responses brief because we've got a great lineup at the mics, and I'm sure glad you're taking numbers. Two things to say about that. One is, it's something I learned the more I went on and studied, is there's a quote by Einstein that I just love, and that is that not everything is measured is relevant, and not everything that's relevant is measured. And so I'm all for evidence and proceeding with good science, but what really bothers me is when people say, well, there's no evidence that it'll harm if we get rid of these head nurses or reduce this staffing. There's no evidence. Well, the fact there's no evidence doesn't mean it's not necessarily true, because it may not have been studied. And if it has been studied, has it been well enough? And I think what we need to push is that there's a burden of proof for those suggesting a change to have the evidence to say it's good or safe change. Because right now, at a macro level, there's a stunning lack of evaluative evidence before changes are initiated. And Linda Aiken, who's done a lot of research in this area, has made that point. So I think that nursing expertise needs to be brought in, as does, and I want to make a plea for our fellow healthcare professionals too, professional expertise, because we're the ones with the codes of ethics and the service standards, must be part of that conversation. And the other point, the final point I would make, is that you don't get good patient care without a healthy nursing workforce and a healthy healthcare team. Thank you. Three is next.
I'm hoping you can expound on the GDP fallacy of the money that really isn't there. You started in the GDP and then we carried on. So I'm hoping you can expand on that, please.
Yeah, I don't have the number at hand, but I can give you a couple of people, to names of researchers to look at. What that is a number of health economists and analysts have pointed out that until about the last couple of years, the percent of GDP in Canada spent on healthcare was actually dropping, not rising, at the same time as there was a rhetoric about spiraling health costs being out of control. Now, you can find this written up, the Romano Report, the Romano Commission, is a wonderful source of all kinds of research documents. It was very well documented. The other economists who've written about this are Maurice Baer, B-A-R-E-R, as well as Bob Evans, have done some writing on what was actually spent.
So the gross domestic product was growing, yet the percentage of healthcare spending was dropping.
Yes.
Is what I just wanted to make sure I heard.
That's right. No, it wasn't a huge percent, but it was significant. And that's I think, started to turn around, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with the health accord. But it is part of, sometimes it's a rhetoric around what we spend rather than actual truth. And it's also always looked at in the short term, which misses the long-term implications. Thanks for the question.
And
I'm sorry, I don't have the numbers.
That information is available. I think we did a whole update on that a couple of years back, and it's available also in our communications research office.
Thanks,
if anybody wants access to it.
Thank you. Two.
Patty, thank you. I've just been back in the workforce for about 6 months, having been VP of the Nurses Union, and I'm in a new job, and I float. I work primarily in obstetrics, but I float through the rest of the hospital. It's a great job. Everyone's happy to see you. You're an extra pair of hands. But it also gives me the opportunity to see the pressures that you talk about, the nurses from one department dumping on someone else, yeah, and the fighting that happens because of the pressures, because things are built up and emerge and they're trying to push them upwards. And it does also give me an opportunity to provide some leadership, because I see that, and because I'm kind of everywhere, people come to me, and probably because people know what I've done. But in addition to that, the employer is refusing to pay me my differential for my master's in leadership, because as a DC-1 nurse, I don't need it. So I guess I just want to put a plug in to push more for float nurses, because having done that work now, I see how important it is, yeah, in the bigger picture, not just the pieces of nursing work that, yeah, I do.
We've actually heard that from our research participants, that who do float or work two areas as they try to advocate. I've heard that repeatedly from people. And the other thing you've pointed out as well is that in order to float, that should be your most experienced person, right? They are leaders, because it takes immense skill to be able to float well. Thank you for that comment. Thank you. Number three.
Good morning, Patty.
Good morning, Frank.
The Vancouver Metro. And Patty, because your words have resonated with me, not just intellectually, but also emotionally, I really don't have a question, but I want to make a couple of quick comments. And first is to acknowledge, actually, when you've talked about the kind of interpersonal relationships and workplace environments that we need to have, you may not remember this, but you and I have worked together.
Oh, I remember that.
And,
yeah.
We worked in sometimes in situations, and I remember very vividly a shift in ICU where you were one of the staff nurses and I was one of the float nurses. And knowing in retrospect now and where I stand and how I've come in my nursing career, it's partly because of the work of people like yourself and those other colleagues I worked with in those many years ago, who created a community within the hospital that I worked that sustained me for many, many years. And often we don't get a chance to publicly acknowledge that, yeah, when we see, as you pointed out, or Deborah pointed out, where our careers have differed, and where they have gone. But sometimes the residue, that lasting effect, lasts for more than 20 years.
Yeah.
And that's an amazing thing. The other acknowledgement that I want to make is also because how I feel about the work that you're doing and how it reflects upon us as union activists, and how important it is when we hear, I believe, an incredible validation of all of the things that we do, and that we do under circumstances now that have changed so dramatically, that how important that is to us, and that it's very, very sustaining to realize that if we have allies, and I say that graciously and inclusively, like yourself working in research, that has given a tremendous amount of support to the everyday work that we do when we are back in our workplaces. And again, I just another personal comment. I'm currently in a job where I'm always the buffer between one unit and another. And I see every day that I work clinically that you know, the work that we have to do to build again that relationship capacity that you ended your dialogue on with that slide, and how much I really appreciate that, because I think it's so important. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Frank. That's a gift. Thank you, Frank. Number six.
My name is Leslie Auger, and I'm from the West Kootenays, and I just wanted to compliment you on your research and the team and all the support that they are giving to the practice of professional nursing. One thing I'd like to make a comment and maybe have you assist me is through displacements, bed closures, hospital closures, I've had the opportunity to actually work in multiple sites in the West Kootenays, and what I've come to know is that there is a high amount of nurses who have a knowledge base that needs to be shared. And in that, I've also noticed that we are all linked. We do not work in isolation. And in a rural practice, which is what I do, I find that I'm actually expanding my linkage to Kelowna, Vancouver, and multiple sites around the province. And I was just wondering if you've heard about knowledge banking and how nurses can do that to promote professional practice.
I think that you've raised an excellent point, and one, you've also flagged that the context in rural nursing we need to understand better, that it is its own specialty, and it's a good example of how it can work. I don't know about knowledge banking, but I do know that something that's being talked about and that I've just joined a new research study on is knowledge transfer, where we make what we know more accessible to each other, but also the general public, to policymakers. But I'd actually like to turn the question to you. I know we won't have time right now, but to hear more about what that looks like and how it can be promoted and fostered. I think that when I've talked to nurses from rural communities, there's an expertise and a generalist, solid expertise that I've rarely seen anywhere else. And there's a huge amount of leadership that's often not acknowledged. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.